is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. And do I have a surprise for you guys? It's been a little bit. We've recorded with Brett and I. We've recorded with Mikey and I. We obviously have the awesome B-Team podcast, which is doing fantastic. But for the first time in about a month, the A-Team, the Dream Team, Brett and Steve and producer Mikey, we're all back together again. I think Mikey's drinking some wine. Brett, it looks cozy as hell in his new podcasting studio, and me, I'm just sitting at my kitchen table with a little, hang on, wait for it. Oh, no high noons today, though. We got a little Topo Chico. Oh, that is fantastic. Producer Mikey and Brett, how the hell are you guys doing?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't call this my new studio, but it's what I've got to work with right now. I was telling Mikey before the podcast, like, the only sitting furniture I really have is like two couches, so I've kind of rigged them up to that's what I'm working with here. So like I said, I hope it sounds all right, but yeah, man, we're making it work, and it's only going to get better.
It looks great, Brett. I mean, at least your background, you have a wall. I have a plant, and I have the window just overlooking the outside there. I got all these windows open, so hopefully my neighbors shut the heck up for a little bit. And Mikey's just in his garage looking like a boss. He's got the weights over there, just looking like a boss, dude. What a sexy guy producer Mikey is.
It's good to be back with the both of you, man. I think I checked like our podcast history. I think the last time we did it was like 7 weeks ago, the three of us. So
yeah.
Oh, wow.
The one I did last week with Steve, I was looking at that too, and it had been a full month. Like, exactly, I think, since the last one I did or something like that. So
yeah, I think the last one the three of us were on was in the play-in. And then you and I did the second round. Obviously, Steve and I have done a bunch. But yeah, it's been a minute. So it's good to have Brett back in the fold. And let's get this fucking thing cracking, baby.
It is. So I'll just ask you guys both right off the jump, man. Either one of you can answer. What have you guys thought of the NBA Finals so far? I mean, it's been two competitive games, I thought yesterday, last night's, we're recording this on a Thursday, just after game three. So this will drop on Friday, right before game four. I thought game four, that first half was pretty competitive, a little bit in the third quarter before Denver kind of ran away with it. But what, Brett, we'll start with you, man. Give me your thoughts on the NBA Finals so far. I got some stats here to share with you guys that I think are just a little bit mind-blowing, but I think it's been really fun. Give me your thoughts, Brett.
Watching Jokic is always fun, you know, so why wouldn't the finals be fun too? I mean, like that it's all about him, not all about him, but that's definitely the first thing I think that comes to mind. Like, he's kind of the defining character in these finals, like, for sure. I mean, it's been a masterclass, you know. I mean, we throw that word around a lot these days, usually talking about one game, but this whole series, you know, really has been a masterclass from Jokic. Even in the game that they lost, he was outstanding. And you could even take that a little further and say it's been this whole postseason. I mean, it's really one of the all-time runs, and this is how he's capping it, you know, so far in the finals, up 2-1 now, in a pretty good position here. I still feel pretty good actually about my Nuggets and five pick, and you know, Jokic wins this title and finals MVP, and it's like, I mean, it's big, like, legacy wise and just in terms of like, where does this, what he's done in this postseason rank against some of the other great individual postseason runs, like, it is up there for sure. Assuming they do go on to win this, which, you know, we can't really assume that. I'd pick them. I feel better about them. Obviously, I think they have a great chance to go back to Denver up 3-1. But yeah, man, I mean, Jokic first and foremost, though, just his brilliance and just him doing it on such a big stage where like everybody is seeing this now. And everybody is talking about it. And everybody gets it now. Because, like, even though he won multiple MVPs, like, I don't know, until his postseason run, it kind of felt like there was a lot of people that maybe hadn't been paying that much attention to him for whatever reason, like, a disproportionately low amount of attention. So that's cool. That's been cool. I'm here for all the Jokic love. Like, I'm trying to, you know, give it out too, you know. Like, I feel like I haven't been high enough on him considering how great he is, and like, now I'm you know, I'm really coming to appreciate
it. Number one fan last month or so, you've been leading the bandwagon, buddy.
I love him, and I love watching him, and again, that's what's made these finals like super entertaining for me, like, above all else.
He's gonna have a Jokic jersey, man. Give him another month, dude. He'll be rocking that baby blue Jokic jersey.
He's nodding in agreement.
Absolutely.
Yes, I will.
But Mike, kind of, what are your thoughts here on these NBA finals so far? I know we've talked a little bit, but give me your thoughts kind of with everyone else here.
Yeah, I think it's been more competitive than I expected it to be, even though I picked Denver in six. Like I figured Miami would have a way to fight and claw their way into these games, and they've done as much. I think Denver's kind of taken control over the last game, and you kind of, if you told me they won out in five games, I wouldn't be shocked. But it's still, they've had a lot of fight. I think the most surprising thing to me from Miami's point of view, like, we've gotten used to over these playoffs, like, their random shooters stepping up and role players and like coming out of nowhere. I was worried about Bam Adebayo going into this series, and I'm a big Bam fan. He's been fantastic. He's got averages, 23 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists. And, you know, it pales in comparison when you're looking at his counterpart, Jokic. But before the series started, I actually went back and watched the last game between Miami and Denver of the regular season. I think it was like middle of February. And the rosters were kind of like completely different from the rosters they have now. You guys like Thomas Bryant playing big minutes. Obviously, Tyler Hero was playing. They were like different rosters completely. Caleb Martin like barely existed. But when I watched that game, what stood out to me was just how much smaller Bam is to Jokic in comparison. And I was like, man, he's going to come in the series and just get bullied. He's been putting up a fight. Every time they're trying to get Jokic post touches, he's making it hard. He's fronting him. Like, when he's in the game, he's doing work. And most importantly, he's not settling for just like bad shots. You know, he's getting into his like mid-range and his floater game, but he's attacking the basket too, and he's putting pressure on them. And I do think that, as far as like we've become accustomed to talking about Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler when we talk about the Heat, I think that Bam Adebayo has been like their strongest point so far.
Yeah, if they were to win this series somehow, like he's probably Finals MVP.
I think so. Yeah,
no question, been their best player so far.
Yeah, guarding the best player on the planet too.
He has been, and talking about the best player on the planet it's kind of crazy. So there's been a total of 5, 30, 20, and 10 playoff games in NBA history, right? Kareem and Wilt have two, one each, and Jokic has the other three. And two of them he's done in these playoffs. Like, he is just ridiculous. On a pace that is just like, dude, it's wild. But before we were kind of prepping for this podcast today, like, I was like, you know what? I'll just kind of go down the rabbit hole just to see kind of, you know, what Jokic's numbers are kind of compared to everybody else. I mean, this playoff series, granted, it's he's top five in points, rebounds, and assists, and he's just outside. I'm sorry, he's leading in points, rebounds, and assists. He's just out of the top five in minutes played. Like, that's a crazy stat. The other stat that I had for you guys, that if I could read my notes, oh, it's a small sample size, but just his all-time finals ranks. Fifth in points per game, eighth in rebounds per game, fourth in assists per game. Again, that's three games, but like, dude's right. Already top 10 in all of those three categories. Like, he's just on a level, man, that like, I swear, every time, the first half, just because I'm trying to get my kids ready for bed and all that stuff, like I'll just be watching. And then when I put them to bed, I have to go back and I'll just catch up on YouTube TV. Thank God for that live recording that you can do. But I swear, man, like I'll be looking down, playing with them. I'll look back up and Jokic is making a jumper. It's like, I don't think I've seen the dude miss. I mean, I know I've seen him miss, but like when you think about it, it's like, does this dude ever miss? Like even just watching that game last night when Miami was kind of, you could tell like they were kind of starting their run and Jokic would just hit a shot in the paint. And like you said, I think Bam is trying his hardest. Like Jokic is a tough ass player to guard. Like he's the best player in the NBA. He's the best offensive player in the NBA. Like, I don't know what else Miami could be doing, giving their size, the size difference between those two guys. But I mean, Jokic is just feasting in the paint, man. He is just feasting in the paint.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do, man. When you have a guy that's that big with that kind of touch and is that kind of a threat as a passer and as a shooter and is just so smart. I mean, his fingerprints are all over the game. Like he's either grabbing a rebound or he's making a play, you know, creating for a teammate, or he's draining just like some moonball jump shot three or like a nice little turnaround of the post or one of those little almost like half hook, half finger roll little jump hooks that he does. Like, it's unbelievable. That's one thing that really has been talked about a lot in the wake of game three is just like his touch specifically. Like, I think Like this has been known that he's got, you know, all-time great touch. Like if you watch him one game, you'll see it. But I think he just had quite a few shots in game three that, you know, found their way in, that hit the rim and just kind of rattled in. Like, and I guess that's what got people talking, because I just saw all over Twitter people saying like he's got like the greatest touch of all time, and I think he probably does. I mean, it's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know if like Bird maybe had that kind of touch. Like I didn't see Bird play, but like I've never seen anything like Jokic in that regard. Like, so if he, you know, catches it anywhere where he's at all comfortable and puts it up, like it always feels like it's going in, and the percentages kind of reflect that when you look at that point. 50% from threes.
I had an interaction on Twitter with our buddy Nathan Grubel one time, and we were talking about like toughest shot, you know, people like regarded as like tough shot makers off the dribble. It's always like guards, but like because Jokic is like the best weird shot maker we've ever seen. Like he's just in these positions where he's like falling away, he's throwing it over his, you know, over his head, these like weird hook shots off one foot, and it's always just like, how the fuck did that thing go in? And they're always timely. They always feel like these like backbreaker shots.
It does. Like I swear, man. Like yesterday's game, granted, now Denver won pretty convincingly, but like, I think against Boston, definitely against Milwaukee, definitely against the Knicks. Like, you know, you could just see Miami's going on that run, and here comes the Joker. And what I loved about last night's game specifically, old man, get off my lawn here, is Denver only made five three-pointers last night. That's all they did was make five, and they scored 109 points. They were 5 for 18 from three. Miami was 11 for 35. But here's the Jokic factor, right? 41 of 80 from the field. They shot over 50% on twos. And we were talking earlier about just the size difference. I don't think I've seen a box score like this in a very long time, just from the rebounding perspective from Denver. Murray had 10, Jokic had 21, Aaron Gordon had 10, and Michael Porter Jr. had 7. Like that, wow. Bam Adebayo tried his hardest. I mean, he had 17. The next closest player on Miami's team with rebounds was Max Strus with 4. That's like pretty damn impressive. Now I know Denver's got the size advantage, but compared to what happened the last game, like this team's unbelievable, man. Like Brett, I don't have any other words to say. Like they're just, it statistically, any advanced metric rating you want to use, your eye test, just watching this team play, they're unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with Murray and Jokic, man. That duo is just, I think they're the best duo in the NBA right now, like pretty clearly. Like, I really don't even know, like, it's not Jalen and Jason. Like, it's just,
hell no, it's not.
You got to like, you know, if you're just talking pure talent, maybe you could make an argument for that or something. But
or
I think
Katie
and Book, yeah, for sure. Like, if you're talking about pure talent,
I know where you're going with it.
But you have to, when you're comparing duos, you have to factor in chemistry, right? Okay. How well they work together, the fit together, and that's where Murray and Jokic. I mean, it's crazy. And
a more like synergistic duo than the two of them together. Like the way they can invert the pick and roll, the way they handle dribble handoff, the way they can play off of each other and make other players on the floor better. Like that's not happening with those other guys. Those other guys, it's like your turn, my turn.
Exactly.
That has to factor into it. How do these guys play together?
Exactly. So that's why I think they're the best duo in the
league. I couldn't agree
more. And yeah, they're just, their rhythm together is so good. But Murray's shot-making ability is massive. Like that one he hit in the second quarter, I tweeted about it, where Miami had gone on a run. I think Caleb Martin had scored 8 straight points. It put Miami up 37-33. I believe the crowd was going nuts. They had gotten a couple stops in a row. Like it felt like the game was starting to get away from Denver a little bit. And then they had this like completely broken possession and the crowd's going crazy. And Jamal just, you know, catches it out on the wing and drains like a three, you know, as the shot clock expired and the crowd just went silent. And then Denver went on like an 8-0 run. And that really felt like a turning point in the game. Like maybe Denver would have, you know, ended up winning anyway, but that felt like it totally shifted the momentum. And then he hit a couple more and, you know, obviously he had a massive game, but it's like in most other finals, like he'd be a clear front runner for finals MVP. It's just crazy that it kind of feels like he has no chance, like despite how brilliant he's been, at least in two out of the three games.
I got two things for you, Brett, which is pretty crazy. Going back to your compared that they're the best duo in the NBA. I mean, they're the first teammates in NBA history to record a 30-point triple-double in a game, in the same game. And not only was it in the same game, it was the NBA Finals.
Like, crazy.
That number one is insane. But here's number two that I found out. I wanted to get some historical stats on Jamal Murray just because we talk about playoff Jimmy, and deservedly so. I think there's going to be a case for playoff Jamal because this guy has just been unbelievable. If you're a Golden State Warrior fan, maybe plug your ears here, specifically you, Adler. In their first three NBA Finals games, here's Steph Curry. 24 points a game, 5.3 rebounds per game, 6.3 assists per game. His shooting splits were 40, 32, and 92%. That's the first time Steph was ever in the NBA Finals. Here's Jamal Murray. 26 points per game, 6.7 rebounds per game, 10 assists per game, shooting splits 51, 38, 91%. And Jamal Murray is a year younger than Steph was.
Yeah.
Well, what's similar there is neither of them are going to win Finals MVP.
True that. Yeah, yeah. Seriously.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good, Mike. That's pretty good.
True that. There's no way. It was funny because I think I said, like, you know, during the Lakers series, I was like, it wouldn't shock me if Jamal Murray did win Finals MVP, like, because he was just, you know, he averaged, I think, 30 against the Lakers or something. Something like that, 28. But yeah, now that it's like, no, this is Jokic, like, first and foremost. But man, Murray's been unbelievable. He really has. And like, his playmaking, like 10 plus assists in three straight games. The pick and roll ball handling that he showed in game three. I think he had 13 possessions as the primary pick and roll ball handler. Probably a high for him in the playoffs, I would think. But he was giving Miami a lot of problems. Like, he forced them to really shift what they were doing defensively and then adjusted back to that pretty quick. And that's when things kind of really opened up for the Nuggets with Christian Brown getting loose.
Your boy.
He was fantastic.
Not Ethan's boy, your boy.
Ethan was definitely on him before me, man. I didn't jump on that bandwagon until I, you know, saw him in preseason. I think I was like, this kid is legit, and he was just awesome for them all season. I think people that didn't watch a lot of Nuggets this season really don't realize that, like, because you just look at the numbers. I don't know what he averaged or whatever, but like, anyone who was watching the Nuggets could see, like, he was good every time he got an opportunity, and it just took a little while to really get into the rotation, but he's played in almost every playoff game. And and in game three, he became the first rookie the fourth rookie in the last 25 years to score 15 plus in a Finals game. Like, that, rookies don't shine like that in a Finals game very often. Your boy Tyler Hero is on that list, a couple other guys, but it's rare. It's rarer than you would think. I was looking at it. Like,
it is, dude. He's just to expound on that and go into a little bit more detail. He's the first Western Conference rookie with a 15-point Finals game since Sam Cassell in 1994. So that's how long it's been for a Western Conference player to do that. It's been a long time.
Yeah. No, he was outstanding. The defense, like, he single-handedly shut Jimmy Butler down on a few possessions. Like, he got a big steal and dunk. Like, it just his energy. He's a great rebounder for his size. He got some big rebounds. Like, he brings so much energy, and he can really play. And he's not what you – if you looked at him, you had never seen him. You probably just think he's like this white shooter guy. And he's an okay shooter, but that's really not his game. Like, he's more of an attacker. Just a powerful kid. Yeah, I love watching him play, and that was so cool to see that. That made me so happy. He was really good the game before too, but of course they ended up losing.
So I think that we're all kind of pretty good in our predictions. I had Denver in six. I would like to see this series go seven because I just think this series is so awesome, man. We're going to talk about Jimmy Butler in Miami in a minute, but it's crazy. Another stat that I have for you guys. Eight players have recorded a 30-point triple-double in the Finals. Three of them are playing in this series. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Jimmy Butler actually did it twice in the bubble series when they played the Lakers.
Man, he was so awesome in that series.
Yeah. I would love to see this series go seven. Like I said, I think we've only really had one. I don't even think it was a bad half of basketball because I couldn't turn the TV off just because Jokic and Murray were so spectacular. And when you enter that fourth quarter against Miami, you could never, ever
– They made a little run.
They did feel it for like a minute there.
Yeah.
Like, is it happening again? And then, yeah, I think Murray and Jokic just hit a couple backbreaker shots and it ended. But they had that momentum where it's like, this is Heat basketball. It's
coming they scored, and then they first forced a turnover, and like it was if they had scored there, they could have cut it to 7 or 8 with like 2 minutes left or something. And then
it's gotta be so fucking annoying. They just won't go away, man.
Yeah, Mikey, yeah. It sucks, man. It's like a walk in the park, dude. Whenever two 20-point leads going into the fourth quarter, just poof, gone. Dust in the wind. Well, what I wanted to ask you guys, and both you guys, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So is Miami's run here like this sustainable for other teams? My immediately when I thought about this question in my head, I was like, there's no way, right? There's no way. They're shooting unbelievable. Jimmy Butler just turns into this beast. He already is a beast, but he ratchets up another level. They have a superstar. They have an all-star player. They have a great supporting cast, and they have arguably the best coach in the NBA. What do you think that – let's not yet necessarily ask it, is Miami's run sustainable for other teams, but what do you think other teams are going to take from this Miami run?
It's a good question. I mean, you can't take Spoelstra because he's theirs.
You can't, but he's – But there's
But he's a big part of it. He's a big part. Like he's one of the first things I would point to. But I would say something that other teams might look to emphasize even a little more than they already do is the conditioning aspect, because I think that's been a big part of it with Miami. And it's like, how are they still doing this? How are they making these fourth quarter comebacks? How are they hitting shots this consistently, this deep into the playoffs? And it's like, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, that's something that they're known for, obviously. All those guys are in great shape. You're not going to play for that team if you're not in great shape. And like, you'd think that every NBA team has a similar standard, but they don't. Miami's on another level with that. And I think that when you look at the, you know, multiple finals runs in what, a 3 year span,
four year span,
and two finals, a conference finals, and then like a first round exit against the Bucks, right? But
four years, three Eastern Conference finals, two NBA finals, and then they got beat in the first round.
And a shot away from three NBA finals.
Yeah, yeah. That Butler right three. There. So like, I think conditioning is something that really factors in with when you look at all that, like how they keep doing this without, you know, they're talented, but they're not that talented or whatever. And that's something maybe other teams will look to emphasize a little bit more. Like, all right, let's create a little Heat culture of our own, because that's a big part of it.
Here's one thing. You said that you can't take Spo, but I think people could borrow from Spo. Is you hear the players talk about it, and Spo has a belief in his players, and he doesn't beat them down. He just wants them to keep coming. Like, this isn't the most talented roster, but you've got guys like Duncan Robinson having like the second half he did in game one and such, where like a lot of coaches might have buried Duncan Robinson by now. It's like this like long
they
time.
They did bury him, Mikey. They did bury him. He was buried for 2 years.
I know, but like coming back and just saying like, you're going to play a role for us. You're going to be there. Just be ready for it.
Yep.
They've got people on their roster just ready to fill their roles. And it's because Spoelstra knows like where they're needed and how to build around them. Like pretty much anytime Duncan Robinson's on the floor, they play a zone defense. They play a pretty effective zone defense, but that's not standard in the NBA. And it's like he's got these kind of players believing in themselves because Spo believes in them, and that's part of their culture. And I think that, you know, you see a lot of coaches either subtly or even directly bashing guys in the media. You can kind of see it with Mike Malone, what he's been doing to Michael Porter Jr. Not to say that Mike Malone's a bad coach or that he's in the wrong for doing so, but it's like, that's not standard everywhere. Like, coaches get fed up with players. You hear the things that came out from Toronto about how Nick Nurse has been handling his players. Like, people get fed up with that. Eric Spoelstra, his guys always play hard for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and for sure. Yeah, and like you, I mean, you could take a lot from Spo. Like, you mentioned the zone. Like, maybe other teams look to play zone defense more. Not just that, but just in general, just like be more scheme versatile defensively. Like, look to disrupt the rhythm of the opponent. You know, that's what Miami does. Like, that's like the essence of their defense, is like disrupting the rhythm of the opponent. Like, just keeping them guessing, you know, keeping them uncomfortable, like keeping them on tilt. And like, it's easier said than done. And you definitely need to have the personnel to do it. And you need to have the coach that can get his players to do it. But I do think though, Steve, it's a really good question. Cause like, you can't just ignore what Miami has done. Like, if you're another coach or another front office or whatever, you know, like a training staff, like you're looking at this and being like, what can we take from this? And so it's a great question. And I definitely think teams are gonna, because they're like, we got more talent than this team. Like, what if we could, you know, install some of these principles and just and apply it to our squad? Like, what would that look like? So, and that's how the NBA is. Like, all these teams are just constantly borrowing from each other, seeing what works, adopting some of it, what they can. And yeah, I think we'll see some of that for sure. You can't ignore what they've done. It's been such an improbable run in a sense.
I would, for me, it's the zone. I'm a little bit surprised that more teams don't play that, especially to your point, Brett, that you said there's a lot more talented teams that are actually bigger and longer that I feel like could thrive playing that zone, because I mean, they put their worst defenders down in the corners. And they just have, Gabe Vincent and Jimmy just up there. And it's really interesting to me. And I noticed it really a lot. I know Miami ran more zone during this regular season than anybody else. But, I mean, you don't really, unless you're a diehard Heat fan, you're not really noticing it too much. When you play against them in the playoffs and you're watching these playoffs and you watch how they go to it and just the disruption that it's caused. I mean, we can go back to the Boston series. And, I mean, you listen to any Boston podcast or any Boston fan and they can't understand why Jason Tatum is what? Top five, top six player in the NBA, and Boston could not just figure out to put him in the middle of the floor, right? Just, and you see Jokic, he can eventually break it down because his passing ability is just out of this world. But to me, that's something that I'm curious, because this is a copycat league, right? If more teams are going to be doing that next year, I'm very, very curious about that. And it's got me a little bit excited. I shouldn't say a little bit, a lot excited what next year is going to look like and what teams are going to take from this. Because I think all three of us would agree, like, I don't think you could have this type of personnel would not work on any other team, right? Like, I don't think, like, Duncan Robinson, for example, right? I don't know if he would be this successful on another team or having this sort of career resurgence. I mean, a team that finished higher in the playoff seedings, the Cleveland Cavaliers, found no use for Kevin Love, and here he is again in an NBA Finals. Like, I just don't – Matt, the Max Strus types. I just don't know what other team can find those gems and develop them unless – to your point, Brett, they take Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley and just bring them over to whatever organization that is. But I do think there's little stuff that they can take in the zone. The zone is something that is very interesting to me. And I didn't even think of the conditioning, Brett. That's a very good point, because that team will just not quit. I heard Brian Windhorst say on Pardon My Take, the podcast, that when he was covering the Miami Heat, they would weigh their players every other day. Every other day, they were weighing their players. Like, that's how strict they are. That's how focused they are. And hey, man, I made fun of Heat culture for a long time. I can't make fun of it, man, because it is – whatever is going on down there, it's working. They shut me up. They shut me the hell up.
Me too, man. Me too. Yeah, it's impressive.
You hated that team earlier this season. You hated them.
I didn't think they were a playoff team. I said that in the beginning of the season. Like, and I mean, they barely were, but look at them now. It's crazy. I don't know, man. They've just – it just works, you know, it just works with that collection of guys that they've got. And I really think Spo is just so much of it is him. And also Jimmy, just the way they kind of set the tone. They're just, they're no joke, man. They're no joke. I think they're a team that a lot of guys would love to play for. Maybe that's part of why Dame said that, Mike.
Oh no. We almost got through 30 minutes without bringing him up. I didn't bring it up, Mikey. I didn't say
my
it.
My bad.
Hands up.
It's more than just Bam. But like, I think it's no secret that, like, I mean, a lot of it's probably Miami, just living in Miami or whatever too. But it's a place players want to play, and guys that want to win, you know, want to play there.
I agree. So let's kind of move over to Denver a little bit, because there is some offseason stuff that I want to get to as well. But what do you guys think of Mike Malone's playoff coaching performance this entire run that they've had? I'll just lead off. I think he's been really good. I think he's been great. I thought last night was a great coaching performance. I mean, you heard, if I have to hear one more time when I turn on the TV or see NBA Twitter about the 17 mistakes that Mike Malone showed his team. But I do like how he went to every single player, even the players that weren't playing, and say, hey, what did we do wrong here? Like, I think that dude's a really good coach. I've always said that he got a raw deal in Sacramento. And this is eighth season in Denver, man, and they're probably going to win the NBA title. And it just shows that sticking with somebody and letting them grow. You know, we talked about it on the last podcast, Brett, with Eric Spoelstra. Like, I'm happy for Mike Malone, dude. And he's up there, man. I mean, he might be a top five coach in the NBA for all we know. Brett, give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's totally fair to call him a top five coach in the NBA. I mean, he's a very different coach than Spoelstra. Like, he's way more emotional. Maybe sometimes he lets that get the best of him a little bit, but he's a human, you know? I think he's a motivator. You know, I think that's one of his great strengths, is that he really motivates his guys. I think he trusts Jokic tremendously. And you know, he loves Jokic, man. Like, I think that as I think any coach of Jokic is probably,
fuck, I would.
But, I mean, right, who wouldn't? But like, I think he's just got this trust in him. And I think Jokic is a big part of their success too, and not just the basketball, like just, I think off the court, you know, everything, just in terms of their culture. Like, I think Jokic is, I think that's a lot of that is him. And I think a lot of that is Michael Malone kind of entrusting that to him.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan relationship. It was like, yeah, you're such like an unselfish, like committed leader who kind of sets, he establishes the tone. Everyone kind of follows his lead. And it's, you could tell how much the coach loves and respects him for that. It's kind of rare to see it, or I guess it's probably the new norm with the way basketball is going internationally, but it's strange to see that coming from a European player.
That's a good comparison, though. Yeah, in that sense.
In the '90s, you wouldn't have seen that. Like, most people would have been like, "Fuck this Euro," but
right.
Now it's like, I think ever since Dirk, that changed a little bit, and I think Jokic is like the first like real like generational leader who is a European player to like run a franchise like this.
He's such a great leader, and like, I think that's another thing about him that is just kind of coming to light now, that they've made this deep postseason run, that they're in the finals. Like, we're seeing it, like just all these little stories, and just really seeing it when we watch it. The way this team kind of carries itself, like, I just think a lot of it stems from him. And like, that's something he probably hasn't got nearly enough credit for until recently, is like his leadership and the way he sets the tone with just his professionalism and his approach. Like, he's a great teammate. You know, I think he's absolutely one of the very best. And like, again, I don't know that he's gotten enough credit for that, at least outside of Denver, until recently. But again, it's cool that we're seeing it. And just because he's, you know, he's like a different type of leader. Like, you know, he's not barking at his guys constantly. And he's very quiet, and he doesn't have that crazy, you know, win or fucking die mentality. Like, he goes about his business like a true professional, and this team kind of carries itself that way now.
Yeah, man, I think that we're looking at Mike Malone, dude. I think he's going to be a Craig Popovich kind of Eric Spoelstra-esque coach. I think he's going to be the coach as long as he wants to be in Denver. I don't see Denver ever really moving on from him, and I think his development, I mean, you can go all the way back, as I said at the top, to Sacramento. Boogie Cousins loved him in Sacramento, when it was really, really upset that they got rid of him, and I thought he was – laying the foundation, the building blocks in Sacramento. And I'm just happy that he found a place in Denver. And like I said, man, I don't see him leaving Denver unless he wants to. Like, he it sounds like there's no pressure. I mean, I'm going to take a little bit of a dig at the Denver Nuggets. I don't, it's nothing personal, but half the fans in Denver can't even watch the games. So like, I don't, there's not a lot of pressure there on him. Like, I mean that seriously. Like, it's not like my city, Milwaukee, is a small basketball town, but there was so much pressure on our former head coach. But I think, like, he's got a job for life there in Denver as long as he wants it. You know what, man? Frankly, he's earned it. He really has earned it. To everything that Brett said, I echo, and same to you, Mikey. But here we go. The offseason of the NBA is my favorite time of the year outside of the Steve NBA time. Finals. My favorite time out of the year. And in June, we haven't even hit the first week of June yet. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there, I'm packing up, I'm getting ready to leave work, and comes across my phone that the Phoenix Suns are waiving Chris Paul. I was shocked. Now it comes out that they're negotiating something. Who knows? If they waive him, they can still re-sign him later on at a discounted price. His contract is partially guaranteed for $15 million. It can go all the way up to $30 million. I was floored. Floored. Brett Usher, I know that you are in finals mode. I know you are. We're only going to talk about this for a couple minutes. I know. I need to hear your thoughts on it. We haven't talked about this before the podcast. We knew we were going to talk about it, but I don't know what you're going to say. Give me your thoughts on this Chris Paul news. It sounds like he's not going to be there.
I'm confused by it. Like, the way that it came out, like, am I wrong, or did Chris Haynes report it as Chris Paul has been waived?
That's what he said.
So yeah, that was pretty fucking shocking. And then because like the timing of it, like why would they waive him right now? Like if he had said they're considering waiving him this off season, so that was weird. But then of course, then it comes out that no, he hasn't been waived and they're exploring all these different options, like in terms of maybe waiving him and stretching him, maybe waiving him and paying him the $15 million that he'd be owed. Maybe they're talking about trading him, or maybe bringing him back. Like so he's not waived. And it sounds like I don't think that news comes out if there's a strong likelihood that he's going to be there next season. So I think he's probably going to be on another team. But just, you know, this has happened with so many stories. Just the way that the news is broken can be so confusing because everyone's in such a rush to be first that like you get these, like whether it was the Ime Udoka thing before the season, the way that that was reported, where it's like, wait, what? Like what's going on? And same with this, like, wait, Chris Paul got waived? Like in early June? Like what? So it was just confusing the way that the news was broken. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be there next season. And like, that's kind of exciting potentially for a couple of these teams that could use a point guard and a veteran leader. So could shake things up a little bit.
What I have to take from that is I think that this is kind of a direct influence of the collective bargaining agreement and like the way teams are going to start looking at decisions like this. Like they're going to become more shrewd. I wouldn't be surprised if we also start seeing DeAndre Ayton's name get brought up, because I think teams that have, especially teams that are built around two like high salary guys like they are, they're going to have to start looking at like how are they going to address their depth. And I think that's the route they're going to go. They're going to say something along the lines of like, Chris Paul isn't worth the contract that he's going to be getting. So if we have an out right now with this like $14 million buyout, we're going to take it. And then we're going to try to trade Ayton for like two or three rotation pieces because we're good enough with our top end talent. But now we're worried about how we're going to be able to complement them.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up too, Mikey, because I listened to Frank Vogel's press conference. I mean, we didn't even talk about that on the podcast. That you know, we all thought for sure. Shout out to you, Bill Simmons. Hold that L, baby. Hold that L. Thought it was going to be Kevin Young. I believe that's his name. But it ended up being Frank Vogel. And one of the things that Frank Vogel said at his press conference was how excited he is to revive DeAndre Ayton's career. Like he's worked with a lot of big men. I mean, I think we can all agree that Dwight Howard played really good basketball under Frank Vogel while he was there. I'm just curious as to what this Phoenix team is going to look like. To me, I think that to your point, Brett, and I think Chris Paul would be perfect for my team, but let's be real with ourselves. If we're being real, he's going to the Lakers. Like that, I mean, on a team friendly contract. I mean, he's got his family in LA. There's no way he's coming out east. I saw your tweet, Brett, yesterday. He'd be perfect in Boston, but we know that's not like it's just the teams that we feel like he would be good, really, really good for. He's going to LA. Maybe he goes back to the Clippers. Maybe there's some sort of reunion, but I don't know. And maybe long shot, he ends up staying in Phoenix on a vet minimum or something along those lines. But I don't know. I want to get your thoughts, both of your guys' thoughts on like where does Phoenix go from here? You have two absolute top five scorers in the current NBA right now in Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. We saw that they did have a lack of depth. And I think most of us for the most part was like, hey, give them an off season, let them retool, let them fill out their bench, let them reorganize and restock, so to speak. I don't know where they go from here. I figured that Chris Paul was not going to be on the team, but I am just shocked that they just outright waived him. Like I'm stunned by that. I thought maybe they trade him. I'm floored by it.
I mean, I don't know. I think I'd like to see them. First of all, I'd like to see them keep Ayton. Like I hope too. They do.
Me too.
Frank Vogel's being genuine. Like he wants Ayton for sure. Like if you're a coach, like that's not a Frank Vogel decision. You know, like that's front office. Like you were talking about, Mikey, with the potential like salary crunch that they could be facing. Like, I mean, he makes a lot of money, but he's an awesome player, and like just from a basketball standpoint, I hope they keep him. I don't know about the Chris Paul fit with this team, just in terms of basketball. Like, especially for that kind of money, like, I don't think they need him. Like, just the way he plays, like, Devin Booker is an awesome pick and roll ball handler. Like, between him and KD, like, those guys can be your primary ball handlers, initiators, creators. Like, it's nice to have Chris Paul. He's Chris Paul, but he feels a little redundant because he's not an elite shooter. He's not like a high volume 3-point shooter. He's not a great defensive player at this point. He was for a long time, but he's really not anymore. And I think that's another area where this team needs to get better. So I understand kind of wanting to part ways with him from a salary standpoint and a basketball standpoint. But that said, I still am surprised by it. I'd like to see them have an offseason similar to what Philadelphia had this past offseason, like fleshing out their depth, adding depth in that way, where they just, you know, they brought in, who did they bring? PJ Tucker, DeAnthony Melton.
My guy.
Daniel House. They got Jalen McDaniels at the deadline in a trade. Like, they went from being one of the shallowest teams in the league to one of the deepest teams in the league, and they had a really nice season, and that was a big part of it. So I think if Phoenix could do something similar, like just add a few of those type of guys, like DeAnthony Melton's don't grow on trees, but like a few just high quality role player depth pieces through free agency would be great. And like you said, Mikey, if it did come down to trading Ayton for like some really high end role players to quality starter caliber guys, like maybe that is something you look to do, because it's hard to make a deep playoff run without depth. And then they're pretty shallow.
See, man, I would push back on that notion just a little bit. I don't know how far this team goes without DeAndre Ayton. Like, I think it's very, very imperative, like, if he is on the team, that Frank Vogel gets the absolute best out of him. Because to your point, Brett, like, if you really look at it, like, Devin Booker can handle the ball. I mean, we saw early on when Kevin Durant was playing in Phoenix along with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, like, Kevin Durant was kind of on some plays, man, he was just a decoy. He was just sitting in the corner. Like, that's Kevin freaking Durant. So, like, I think that they have enough ball handlers with Durant and Booker. I just think, man, if you can get the right stuff out of DeAndre Ayton, like, he's never going to be – we have to understand, like, when we look at these players, like, he's never going to be this 30-20 guy that everyone wants him to be. Like, he's just not. It's somewhere – who was I having this conversation with? Was it you, Mikey, or was it Brett? I can't remember. We were talking about Bam. We were talking about Bam earlier in the season. Yeah. And it was like, Bam is never going to be this 30-15 guy that everyone wants him to be. He can get you that in a couple games, but he's going to be really good. If you coach him to his skills, you're going to be just fine. And I think that's DeAndre Ayton's problem.
Sure. I think that's a pretty poor comp, because Bam just has so many intangibles to his game.
Thank you, Mikey. I wasn't comparing the players. I was just comparing like the media scrutiny around these guys.
Gotcha. Like, the standards we hold them to.
Bam's probably never going to produce, you know, statistically at a higher level than he did this season, right? Like, yes, 21 and 10 is probably like his ceiling. And same with Ayton. Like, Ayton, like, I don't know, I might have said when Ayton got drafted, like, this is a guy that could, you know, in the right situation, maybe give you like 27 and 12. And like, I don't know, maybe he could not on Phoenix though. Like, but like, he probably isn't that guy. I think you're right, Steve. And just to be clear, like, I hope they keep him. I think they should keep him. I think they should see what he looks like under Vogel and with Durant and Booker for a full season. And maybe without Chris Paul, like, maybe his role expands a little bit when he's not just doing that pick and roll with Chris Paul. Like, I think he's got more to his game than he's shown. And I think playing alongside Chris Paul, you kind of got to play a certain way as a center. I think Ayton can do a little bit more. So I really do hope that that they stick with him, at least, you know, for next season.
Can I throw one at you guys? I know we don't really do fake trades very often.
Oh, I love it. Come on, you're speaking my language.
All right. I don't know exactly what would all be coming back, but what about DeAndre Ayton in Indianapolis? Playing for the Pacers, playing with Halliburton. Dude,
it'd be Miles Turner. Like,
if you get Miles Turner and you get like Buddy Hield back. And like, those are some pieces that would really help the Suns. And then think about the kind of numbers that Ayton would put up playing off of Halliburton
He could average 25. He could average 25.
And like they need like a stabilizing inside force. Like Turner's not quite on like the same timeline. He'd come help with the defense. He'd space the floor for Booker and KD. Like I think that trade's got some wheels.
It almost makes too much sense.
I mean, you know? I don't know. Indiana might be persuaded to do it. I mean, they did offer him the offer sheet, but I think Phoenix does that. They don't even blink. Could you imagine Buddy Hield, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker all on the floor at the same time?
And Turner spaces the floor too.
My God! Those are three. I mean, Buddy Hield is one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA. Period. And no one really talks about him because he played in Sacramento and then now he's playing in Indiana. But he is one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA. And then you pair him with KD and Booker. Dude, I don't even think Phoenix thinks twice about that.
Yeah, but I think it's a good trade for Indiana too. Like if you look at Haliburton, like Ayton's a monster as like an above the rim finisher. Like he'd be an upgrade over Miles Turner in that regard. Like he might be a much better fit with Haliburton than Miles Turner is. I don't know. I think
on the short roll and finishing and like punishing players.
It's healed though, where I think Indiana maybe pauses a little bit. I think they would do an Ayton for Turner swap.
But Hield's not really on their timeline. Hield's almost 31, which is weird because he's just got drafted like five years ago.
He might be like 37.
And they've got Mathurin who plays pretty much the same position.
Exactly.
That's my guy, dude.
You know, so like to unlock him, like they might, I mean, I don't think they're that attached to Hield and I don't think they're that attached to Turner. I don't know. It certainly wouldn't surprise me if that trade went down.
Can Turner get traded because he just signed that extension?
I think he can now.
Yeah, that was like early last year, right? I think it's
that he signed it.
I think it's a year from the date that you sign it.
I think he could be traded this summer. I'm not positive. Yeah. On that, but I don't know, man. That trade, it makes a lot of sense for both teams. Like, if you're Phoenix and you're trading Ayton, like that's the kind of haul you need to get back. It's like two really high quality players. Like he's got a lot of value, I think, still in this league. When you think about how young he is and his skill set and his athleticism and his durability, he's a very durable player. It was a big part of their finals run. So.
Well, and it would be good for his career too, because if you think about it, like obviously if they go on to compete and win a championship, that's great. But if he needs to have like a couple like all-star seasons under his belt, going to Indiana is like way more plausible to happen there than it would be in Phoenix, like competing for touches with the players that he's playing.
Yeah, he really could put up some numbers in Indiana.
I think he could. Yeah, that could be like a 30-12 kind of situation.
He could put up some serious numbers.
It would remind me a little bit of like Amari playing with Nash like early in his career. Just like the focal point of a spread out offense. Like,
right. If he's your number one scoring option,
yep.
Which he probably, I don't know, Mathurin, if it was next season, he probably would be.
Mathurin's
going to get there though.
I just want to let you guys know, Turner signed his 2-year, $60 million extension on January 28th.
So maybe it'd be a deadline deal.
It'd be a deadline deal, yeah.
Which would make more sense anyway. Like, again, I think you want to see what Ayton looks like with Vogel and with KD and Book after a training camp. And, like, I think you want to see what that looks like. I don't think you want to punt on him quite yet. Chris Paul's another story. I don't blame them. I
don't either. I'm just
like when he got hurt,
we heard the word wave for Chris Paul. I'm floored by that. I still cannot believe that came across my timeline on my phone. I was like, wait, what?
I can tell you, I guarantee you that Chris Paul's camp was not happy about that wording. Like, there's got to be some behind the scenes turmoil. Well, and
for
right
him
now.
To say that it happened.
The opposite. I thought Chris Paul was the one that leaked it, or someone from his camp leaked it. That's what I thought. I mean, Chris Haynes has a pretty good relationship with, he's got that relationship with Dame. I know that he's got a decent relationship with Chris Paul. Like I could be way wrong. That's initially what I thought, though.
I don't know, man. I don't know where that came from. I wonder if we'll find out, because it obviously wasn't totally accurate. But I think it was indicative of what's going to happen.
Crazy, most likely. There's more to come with that one for sure.
Oh yeah, we're so close. We're so close.
Loves the off season, man.
What is the actual date today? So the date is June 8th. In a couple of weeks we have the draft, and then a couple of weeks after that, man, it's free agency. Like, that's it. And we're here, man. I cannot wait.
Summer League, baby.
Summer League, baby.
Summer League. We'll all be in Summer League together. That'll be fun. Okay. And basically by Summer League, most of the major moves in the NBA will be done with. I mean, there's still going to be a bunch of smaller moves that happen, but the big dominoes will have already fallen. Like, I can't wait. I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
The NBA never sleeps, man. That's the thing I love about it. It's year round, bro. It is year round. There's always something cooking. I love it.
I love it. All right, man. So this is going to be dropping on Thursday. What are you guys? Is quick. We only got a couple minutes left. Brett, what's your prediction for game four, Denver or Miami?
I'm going with Denver, man. I'm going with Denver. I'm with you though. Like, I don't give a, I predicted Denver in five. I don't give a fuck about my prediction. I want it to go seven. I'm with you. But I do, I think Denver, for game four. Yeah, I do. I think they take it. I think they go back home up 3-1 and they close it out in game five.
Mikey?
I'm going Miami in game four and then Denver wins the next two.
Oh, I like it. I like it. I am hoping that Miami wins game four, but I just think Denver's going to win this one. And I think that they're going to close it out at home. I just think that kudos to Miami, man. They've had a hell of a run. They beat the two best teams in the East pretty handily. This is a tough task, man. This is a whole different beast just because, as we talked about, the size difference, best player in the world that they're playing against. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Miami takes it to them in game four and we get a little bit of a longer series that at least goes six. So, all right, that'll do it for us. Everyone raise a glass for some wine that Mikey's drinking. I got my Topo Chico. Brett, surprisingly, you don't have any Michelob Ultra Lights tonight. A little disappointed in that. Next pod for sure. But for myself, yeah. Brett and Mikey, we really appreciate you guys listening. And we will be back next week. We'll talk to you guys then. Enjoy the NBA Finals. See ya. We'll be right back.